lost the script. You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
Hi.
And it's me, Brian. And on this episode, we are covering the anime that aired the week of the 7th of June to the 13th of June, 2021. And we're going to kick off with Moriarty the Patriot, episode 21, The Sign of Mary. Are you familiar with a Sherlock Holmes story, The Sign of the Four, or The Sign of Four? Well, what? Here it is in a very abridged form.
We got to get to those waterfalls, man. We do not have time.
I think this is probably the most faithful it's been to an individual Holmes story so far.
Does it not suffer for being so shortened because you've seen this adapted like a lot?
Maybe because it's been adapted so often. You think that, we've seen Uncle Ben get killed. Get to the point.
Yeah. Exactly. Of it, yeah. Know? Like I said, we don't feel like we're missing out on anything because we're already fairly familiar with it.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, we miss out with Sherlock doesn't get to wear a disguise. The dog is here. That's the thing. It's the dog. The dog is in the book and has the same name.
I was so glad when they like proudly had that little dog and then like just had him barking off screen. It's like, we're not drawing that fucking dog again.
Is it just a very proud and happy dog? It's like, I was happy to be here.
Mm, mm. Happy to be part of the show.
I'm a detective.
Yes, the only big change is that Mary Marston's motivation for wanting the treasure is because she's being blackmailed by the most evil man in London.
You got to tie it back into the main.
Yes.
Plot. Yeah.
So that's the little bit of twist to it that it's given it. But it's not like, it wasn't like, these guys after the treasure are secretly connected to the Moriartys or anything. It's pretty much by the book, just with huge chunks of the book taken out to get from A to B. Less discussion of having to spend decades working in slavery, which I think is the motivation that Good's got in the book.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, it gets your high points in. It gets like the investigation, just talking to the person assigning you the job and trying to figure out the motives. Yeah. You get a crime scene investigation. You get a boat chase. You get a lot of good
poison darts. Action. That's the important.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You get a lot of good shit. It covers what it wants, though.
The exoticism of colonial adventurism, essentially. Yeah. Which I was like, I guess they could have done something that with its theme, but it feels like the Moriarty's concerns end at the shores of Great Britain and not really concerned with the rest of the world.
Not really concerned with all the countries that Great Britain fucked up on the way to becoming great. Yeah.
Well, you got to think of it this way. You should like try to set a goal you might be able to actually achieve.
Yes.
Start small. Yeah.
Let's change the
most powerful country in the world at the time.
It's a nice reminder that this is actually Sherlock Holmes you're dealing with in this story by having this thing. But yeah, like you said, it's because I must have seen the Jeremy Brett one umpteen times that I was able to like fill in all the missing bits.
Mm.
We got Dragon Goes House Hunting, episode 10. Hunter Goes Dragon Hunting.
Whoa.
In which we get to know the hunter a little bit more and his cat.
Do either of them get a name?
I think
Hunter probably cat sist.
I think the cat gets a name. Yeah.
Yeah.
He must have a name because they get their credit boxes, don't they?
Huey Lewis and the News.
Yeah.
Because that's the funny joke on the iCatch is that the cat's got a higher level than the hunter's got.
He's working on it, man. He's just a little too cautious.
Yes, he's very cautious. But that's
Laura is MP though, so
yes.
Mm.
The cat kind of wants to be like the heroes all the time. but basically, it allows them to, they're tracking down the dragon, which allows us to revisit various buildings that the dragon had attempted to set up home previously.
Because they're basically on the trail of the dragon, just many episodes behind him. Hmm.
Sorry, how that rumor is growing out of proportion now as well, because after he's like following a trail of destruction or whatever like that Letty's left in his path, he stumbles into the Hunter's Guild. I got a bounty for you. Give me a whiskey. A bounty for what? A monster that could destroy the entire world.
Yeah, he feeds into it as well. It's great.
And then in the second half, we are finally introduced to the other main character, Adriana, Ellen, Croydia, Margareth, Emmeline, Narsim, Felder, or Nell for short.
I think I looked up the as well as in the character list, but I think like she's got even more in there, but yes. Just fast forwarding through it. That old anime joke.
After they rescue her from bandits.
Also, I gotta say, she has that acerbic personality that is perfectly contrasted from our other characters. I'm just like, yes, this fits very well with everything else. We need someone to be given out the whole time, yeah.
And it turns out she's run away from home because her father ate her cupcake.
He didn't even apologize. The fuck? Fuck him.
That might have been the final straw. Mm. It was the only straw. You find out.
And yes, there's like various attempts to find her a home with a suitable bath for her.
Hmm.
Which culminates in them setting up a hot metal tub for her to take a bath in. She demanding that Letty turns his back to her. He's like politely trying to explain that he's a dragon. It doesn't really make any difference if a human's naked in front of him. And then some heroes come by. And they're like, that dragon's cooking that princess.
And she's like, no, I ran away from home. This is unrelated. But, you know, Letty's going to look out for her. He's going to protect her. Because, like our elf guy suggested, Letty is now a dad of two children.
Yes. Like a fine father of two. He's so proud. Kind of shouting it from the rooftops almost. Mm. Oh, come on. A little bachelor right here.
But then he settles on their relationship being wife and mother-in-law.
Mm.
It's super so bland. Do you put any flavour into it at all? Would you stop when you don't have to eat it then?
Yeah, this is a good one. The cautious hunter falling into the rumour mill around the dragon and feeding into it as well. And just a new character to kind of like fuck the lads out of it a little bit. Because Diaria is very like, oh, you need a bath that has like a nice hot natural water. Okay, yeah, I know natural hot springs is perfect. She's like, this is a fucking cave. I'm a princess. What are you doing?
That's supposed to be hot. It's actually towards the volcano. So, Diaria is humorous is only. He is essentially a robot when it comes down to it. So.
Yes, because you can't quite tell whether he's like doing this to teach her humility or whether it's. This is just his interpretation of his requests.
Mm-hmm. You got to be very specific with him, or it's hard to know with him, and that's kind of the fun of him as well, yeah. As a character. So,
mm-hmm. Like if you want, I can show you a site for like if you want to do your own build, but no, this is what's on the market. It's not a buyer's market, I'm afraid for you. So it's just the way it is right now. It's just to wait a couple of years for this to all even out. You know how you would say it is.
But yeah, I mean, that's like so late to introduce one of the main characters. So I was like, okay, is this only going to be 12 or 13, or is it carrying on through next season? I don't know. But
yeah, no idea. I'd be
delighted
if it kept going, but
as I was saying to Dwayne earlier in the week, the one thing that just struck me with this is it's never the flashiest show. You could never accuse it of being that. But what it has been is incredibly consistent throughout the series.
Because if you just had the bit with the hunter as your episode, I can see a lot of shows like stretching that to the whole episode because it's really fun. But they like first half, okay, now we're done with that. New plot, brand new main character.
Yeah.
The show just keeps on fucking moving and it just packs in the jokes. It's great.
Yeah. It's as well, like this is what I tend to always have, like, you know, I run out of time or I miss a week. This is when I kind of... Let's level up wisdom. Like, I can kind of just pick up wherever it is in the current.
Yeah, one. Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah, it's fine. You know, oh, there's like a baby bird here, or they're just trying to find a new house. So that, like, you, it's fairly consistent in its premise anyway. You know, it might have a little backstory here or there, but it's like, they're trying to find a house. Here's a weird thing about why houses work in fantasy world, or how they would be weird in a fantasy world.
And the stakes are like super low. Like one episode that ended Letty getting kidnapped, I was just like, this will be fine. This isn't the kind of show to make me worry about the characters. Even the heroes that keep being massacred, they keep coming back. They keep getting rezzed up for extra gold, I guess. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And then you can get on with like, what are you going to do this week? What's a Minotaur going to do with a duplex? Let's find out.
And still nobody credited for the scripts, which makes me wonder just how close it is to the comic.
It's just being spat out by a computer. Guy, got a script, lads. Better make this.
And then finally from the Sundays block, it is Megalobox Nomad episode 10. Who's going to have a go at the Spanish?
did you say it last week, Dwayne?
Well, you weren't here last week, so yes I did.
Oh yeah, you put that up, sure. Okay. Las derrotas pasadas son acompañadas por señales de buena suerte. Past defeat is with the omen of good fortune.
In which everyone is slowly coming to the round to the idea that he's going to have to fight Mac.
Well, he's issued a challenge first.
He's been issued a challenge, and he's like, oh, I see, that must be wrong. But then he goes and he runs into Mac and sees that Mac's son's got a storybook about the nomad and the hummingbird. It's destiny. That makes him remind him of Chief.
And like, I was thinking of how, like, it's fairly obvious that's the way it's going to go down, because obviously he meets Mac coming out from visiting Lou in the hospital, and Lou is fine with it. He's ill will over it. It's just like, yeah, you fucking beat the shit out of me fair and square, dude. But Lou was using like a super lightweight gear to keep his speed up. And it's clear, it's like, well, he's got the super defensive gear that was built to take fucking punishment. So that's what he's going to end up kind of using against Mag. It's all kind of set up.
He's gearless Joe. He can't do that. It's like, he can do whatever the fuck he wants.
He's done it at least once.
This is what this episode is all about. It isn't what other people think of him or want him to be. He is who he is. And recognizing that, it's also, I am who I am, and I'm the person who made those mistakes, and I'm the person who has to atone for them. Yeah. There's no other way about it.
With the help of my good friend, the guy who runs fixed Megalobox fights.
Why are we supposed to like this guy all of a sudden? He's an asshole.
I don't know, Fujibaki, he's pretty cool. He's a jerk.
But... Oh, no, he's cool, but isn't it him who cut out, like, Nambu's other fucking eye?
Hey, Nambu was cool with that. He just says, if this gets us over the line to our dream, then I'm willing to get cut it out myself, even.
Yeah, but I feel like posthumously pouring him out like a freaking some whiskey. It's just like, yeah, here's to you, my friend, whose eye I cut out. I did that for you. Are you happy now that you're dead? Like, again, cool guy, cool theme, like smooth as fucking silk, and just walking away from, like, daisies, trying to look really nice at the end of this.
Yeah, it's also as well that the person who probably will be able to clear all this up is dead. It's Nambu, because Joe had said, like, you know, Joe said clearly, oh, I promised Nambu I'd go through with this fight against Edison Liu, you know, is what you want. And then Saturn actually thinking, you're a sinner, he's doing this for your own pride, and you're just gonna put him to a ring in his final days, aren't you? But said, no, Nambu talk with him on a dead river and said, yeah, I'm not sorry, I don't regret anything, even this. So make sure you go out and win the fight. No matter how bad I get, make sure you go and get in the ring for me, because this is who we are, man. We gotta, like, you know, try and see this out to the end. So Job as well, you know, there was a little bit of, he didn't want that dream to die, because that means he was saying goodbye to whatever him and Nambu did. But it was also like, no, this is like, I promised Nambu I wouldn't stop until I tried everything, until I did everything I could to win it. So.
Yeah.
But I like the speech the guy gives Sachio about, why are you doing this, kid? And he's like, well, for the money. Okay, right. I'll give you all the money you possibly want as long as you agree to do fixed fights for the rest of your life. That's like...
Yeah, it's like, money's not a fucking problem. I can get you paid.
Yes, just name what you want. And
some fights you're going to win, some fights you're going to lose, and I'll fucking tell you which are which.
Yeah, which then that allows him to set up the fight with Sachio and Joe, where Joe is, yeah, if I beat you, you got to leave this ring, come back to Nowhere Gym.
And if you beat me, I'll leave town, no questions asked, you'll never see me again. And it's like, now that's a fixed fight.
Yes. And now I'm going to kick the shit out of you until you look like Joe Yabuki. Because that was what I did like, was it's like, oh, Sachio is the guy who gets to look like Joe Yabuki when he's falling down with his hair flopping in front of his eyes.
Which is weird that it's just like, I enjoy saying, you don't stop trying to be me, right? It's okay, you don't need to like take my place.
Yeah, so him like physically looking like original flavor Joe, because he's the angry teenager as well, which is more like the original character.
But yeah, I like the music when doing that bit, the bit where Joe's coming round to the idea of fighting Mac, and the bit where Yuri's coming around to the idea of supporting Joe. And I'm like, don't let the music tell you, Yuri, you were right beforehand. You were the only person who's thinking straight on this.
Yeah, it uses character themes and thematic themes like really fucking well in music in this. I did like the thing of our former Megalobox developer, now college professor, been chewed out by like basically going like, hey, we're gonna fire you unless you retract that fucking article you wrote. And he's like, oh, it hasn't been 5 years since you've been out of school, has it? And it's just like, yeah, because he fucking taught her in, and it's again the world you kind of make and the way it changes you.
You were much more idealistic back then, you know. Yeah. I've become, you know, coming at me with this fucking corporate lawsuit. What happened to you, kid? You used to be like this. It's like, I changed, professor.
Yeah. And I like the board of the Shirato company all looking like Dick Tracy villains.
Yeah, all old pudgy faced men kind of thing. And it is the kind of thing of, it's like, I'm the head of this company, and they're like, whoa. Do we really want to fucking do this? It's like, yeah, but we said we'd stop developing military weapons. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, and we took a huge hit for that. Now maybe we should develop military weapons. And it's like, God damn it, guys. But
you got any other industry you could apply this to? I don't know.
Probably most of them.
But to see if maybe if there are other big, arm of the company is probably making gears and things for medical things. But we need more war so we get more people their arms blown off, so we can make more prosthetics for them. It's obviously.
Yeah,
one hand washes the other.
I assume that's going to play into Mac's kid's surgery. Like, that's tied into that.
That was a cruel fucking reveal, man. I didn't like that. The kid turns over and he's sleeping. There's a big fucking scar in his chest. I was like, oh, man, don't be... Be messing with me
it's
like
going
that.
To be that melodramatic. Yeah, because up to this episode, I was like, oh, Joe's going to die in the ring. After this episode, I was like, oh, no, Joe's going to kill Mac.
like, it seems like maybe, yeah.
But it sends you home, man. And as well, it's also like getting like Chief, because Chief, his son was also in poor health, but he didn't get the help treatment he needed.
Yeah.
So again, let's see how that story could have run. In Mac's case,
if he managed to get into a successful thing,
but right? That is, of course, assuming that Joey's not dead at the end of this episode already.
Getting the shakes back, man. Like, whatever he was using, whatever pills he was taking, or whatever the pills were keeping at bay, he's just coming back in again. Again, before going to allude to if anything. What kind of injuries you get in the ring, like how many blows to the head can you take before you gotta retire out of there? In a wheelchair, you know.
We have two guys hospitalized from fights, one with Joe and one with the guy Joe's about to fight. So it's like, yeah. It is a common enough thing and definitely a theme in this.
Yeah.
It is. I'm like, are they gonna try and tempt him to use the device as well? And I'm sure he'll say no at this point, but because it will be it'd have to be the theme of, I don't use technology, I shall beat your technology by just brutalizing my own body.
But that's why I feel like he can use Chief's gear as well, because Chief's gear was made with heart. It was made for the purpose. Like,
that, it has to come out. He has to wear it.
Yeah.
I can see him using that to beat Mac, and then the final fight can be him and Liu. Absolutely had the shit kicked out of them both in a recreation of Yuri and Joe.
I was wondering, like, was Mac going to react in his bestial slash childlike state to the hummingbird decal on it and shit like that? Because, again, that's a symbol that means something to him, clearly, from the book he reads his son and that kind of thing. Yeah.
Because we've got 3 episodes left, so we could get both those fights in.
Yeah.
For sure. Then it is Fruits Basket, the final season, episode 10. I just love her. I assume it's not in that tone.
It is kind of. That's all like Kyo is running to has said, like, I love Toru, but I don't love her because of this or that. It's like, I can't really pull it into any kind of flowery phrase. I just fucking love her. I just love her.
But yeah, like he's trying to figure out Ari's reasons for doing so, selfish or selfless, and it's just is basically the conclusion that he gets to. We're working our way to the happy ending, but we're really fucking like those last few fucking feet are gonna drag on us. I guess
there's a lot of fucking like epilogues happening in here, maybe a little bit quickly because we gotta ram us again to check or watch. We've got like 2 episodes left to get this thing wrapped up and get everyone's little epilogue sorted out here. So, but at least they get them, I suppose. So we got to open Kureno and Toru in the hospital. So we're getting lots of visitors, lots of familiar faces and friends. So Hannah and Aris are there naturally to support Toru. But also it's like, oh, Aris, you know Kureno, that dude you fell in love with after one day hanging out with him. You have to stop thinking about him. He's here. Because there's also about what they weren't actually doing as well. So I'm sorry, you know. He's in here because I stabbed him, and I'm trying to make amends for it. And it's just especially the side of Akira was as well. It's just kind of very shamefacedly having to, but still going around and trying to atone for things she's said and done to everybody, and to the friends and family of the people that she said and done doing horrible things as well.
It's interesting, like, a lot of people are, if not forgiving, then at least sympathetic to Akito. And then Akito's like, I don't know what to do with that. You can't just, you can just forgive me? That's crazy. Is that allowed? Yeah.
It's probably because she's brought up in the house for, like, this, like, you have to have reprisals. There has to be any kind of, the nails that up gets hammered down. There has to be, like, brutal reprisals for anybody who steps out of line. And she's expecting that then from anybody, especially after watch. She knows full well she's inflicted upon others, but it's just like you've been in that cooped up in the house way too long. That doesn't really know like how the fucking rest of the world works. You've only known you've been in this goldfish bowl all your life. No wonder you're so maladjusted. Like.
I think it was an interesting kind of showing of Akito's where she's coming from with the I guess like the woman who kind of runs a lot of the household. I'm not sure. If she's been given a name.
Head maid, yeah.
Yeah, head maid, it might be. And she's kind of like regretting. It's like, you're just taking apart everything I've spent 40, 50, 60 years putting together. And Akito's just like, yeah, stay here as long as you need, but I'm moving on from this.
Yeah.
Because Akito's like, hey, we're not taking the cat in. By the way, tear down that little fucking cat house. That's not happening anymore.
Mm.
I'm shutting this whole fucked up situation down.
Yeah. But Aris gets her a few little minutes with Kureno as well.
Still don't like the age gap. Hate that.
Even the age gap is there. So she's goo-goo over him after again, one day of hanging out. But you can still kind of see you've got a lot of stuff you got to work out instead. From when you got to get out of the hospital and you got to, you know, sort out what's going on with your family. And also, you know, maybe wait till like, fucking at least graduate from school, perhaps. But it was a sense like, oh, I don't mind waiting for you to get out of the hospital, waiting for me to graduate, waiting for you to be ready to accept me into your life kind of a way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Other little things happen Then it's just when Kiyo was snuck back in the house to get a few things, and Yuki is just, oh, he's not fucking getting off of this one. And he goes up there and just like points, what the fuck are you doing back here? You know she's in the fucking hospital, right? You can fucking visit her once in. I can't. I'm too ashamed. It's like, motherfucker. And they start knocking the shit out of each other. And it's like, fucking Shigeru and Haru downstairs, you know, they've got pizza. They're eating.
It's hilarious that, yeah, Haru's just shown up. He's like, hey guys, you left the door open. And they're like, oh, fuck, I guess we left the door open. And while this dramatic argument, it keeps cutting the downstairs. It's like, can I order pizza? And then later on, they're eating pizza. And it's just like, it's really funny that they're just like, yeah, I guess their boys will be boys. And they're just going to have it out while the lads just have pizza downstairs. Very funny contrast. But the very serious things happening upstairs. And it, he kind of admits to Kyo that it's like, I've always been jealous of you. And it's like, I was always jealous of you.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Because obviously Kyo had a kind of freedom that he didn't have, and also literally he makes Toru happy by his presence because she loves him, and that's something he can't give to her. That's something he can't do for her. So yeah, it was kind of interesting to have that kind of admission of, it's like, I hate you, and that because I admire you so much is why I hate you. The contrast, yeah.
But it seems to get through to Kyo nonetheless. It's just, he's kind of, well, maybe Yuki's whole thing was why he didn't quite get how he was perceived by people, or how he wanted to be perceived by people. Mm-hmm. And Kyo was seeing as well as just like, whether I like it or not, whether my upbringing or my fucking temperament is, people still see me and view me and in their lives in a certain way. So I need to reckon with that myself. So before we can go and see Toru, his love in the hospital, he goes back home. He goes and meets up with that piece of shit dad of his, who was just, in fairness, he's got a pretty rad vinyl collection, but he's just been fucking drinking his life away in his study, listening to his records, I suppose. He's going like, who let him in? You get out! You killed my wife!
Yeah, but it's clear, like, and he's just sort of standing there taking it, because he's like, I need to kind of get this. I need to understand this motherfucker a little better before I can kind of move on with my life. And the more abuse he gets hurled at him, both like the glass of whiskey and the verbal abuse, the more he kind of realizes, like, you were talking this exact same way to my mom, and that's why she killed herself. And he's like, yeah, fuck, okay, so I might have gotten my mother killed by my very being born, but you didn't fucking help much, motherfucker. Yeah. You kind of pushed her to it. And it's just kind of him going like, yeah, just more so pitying his father rather than not even, I guess, hating him a little. But he did say, I'll come back and visit again at some stage. But
he's also I think like about a good, maybe like a half a foot taller than him now. So it's like for some reason, oh, I'm bigger than my dad now.
it's just how small and pathetic and broken his fucking father is, and just going like, okay, don't become this. Gotcha. Okay, this was a good lesson.
He's hearing things back that, you know, he said himself, like, this is all your fault. If you weren't here, things would be fine. It's his father's head. I learned it from you.
Yeah, exactly the kind of guy he could have turned into if unchecked. But he's checking in on him for the purposes of not becoming that guy. So he's going to go visit Tor in the hospital. And he's like, should I? Sees her two friends come out, and then Toru comes out. It's like, all right, no, I just love her, absolutely. I don't need to question yet. And then Toru bolts like a deer.
He's like, wait, come back. We have to have our tearful reunion.
That did feel like a very real reaction to the situation. It's like, just fucking legging it. It felt like human and stupid, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was quite good.
It is like, this is why you kind of build it up in your mind. This is going to be so melodramatic, you know, it's going to be fun, this whole thing. It's going to like all shake down. But sometimes this doesn't. It's like, it's just a little bit awkward. And it's like, no.
I wasn't mentally prepared for this, so I'm literally going to run away. It was pretty fun. But we're getting there. We're getting to the happy ending, the super happy ending.
Yeah. They touch on it a little bit, and I guess to expand upon it more as well, is that Yuki uses this, you know, post that clash, is just fun saying, motherfucker, God, can't believe he was jealous of me. What the fuck? You know, fun. Who's this? Hello? It's Machi. I was just in the neighborhood. I was wondering if I was saying, We went there. I really want to see you. And he's just running. He's fucking running full pelt down the hill to the station to meet her. And he's going to get that again. He's having a little epilogue with her. Because finally, because there's somebody in your life for you. You know, it isn't just these people or this one person. There's somebody else out there for you. You know, so you got to go to her too, man. You got to take your own advice. More 11. I think there'd be like, there's 11 there. I think there'll probably one and 12. Because I think, 11 would be Kyo and Toru when they have, that's probably when the final break will happen, and then 12 would be the victory lap, so to speak. So, A little bit kind of constrained in places out there, like it is today, so I'd be like, some guys getting short shrift here, but at least we're getting some shrift, if any. So,
Then we got Odd Taxi, episode 10, We Have No Tomorrow. So we start off with the Homo sapiens not managing to get through the round of the comedy competition. Instead it goes to Bono Illumination, the panda-leopard combo. And then we get the warthog being met by his biggest fan, the giraffe, who's basically criticizing him and then saying, we should team up. It's clear you're going to break up, you two. So when you're broken up, I'll come and join you and we'll be a double act together. I'm great at writing. You've read all my letters.
I was reading my letters on. I'm clearly very funny. I'm a very funny guy. I have a cool podcast on YouTube. Yes. You should listen to it.
I know which jokes you should be putting in your act. Why aren't you using your best jokes?
You know, put like your greatest hits in for like your channel. Well, maybe you should. We have won the round otherwise.
I love the way the warthog keeps like slipping into the act, like because he's like, "Does that work?" And he's like, "No, that's too obscure a joke."
Where's this guy? It's a smoke and shelter in Osaka. What's he talking about here? Like, what? Hang on, that's a bit too complex.
That might play to a local audience. It's not going to work on me. Yeah.
Then we check in on Yano and Sekiguchi. And they're pondering their plan on getting this money off this idiot who's been boasting online.
We know that they know that we know that we have to get it, but we're going to get it. Yeah. It's fine.
He's like, yo, I can tell that's a Photoshop by the pixels. We're going to come down hard in the sky no matter what. We're trying to lie to us like a porcupine.
Couple of things, right? Number one, either Odakawa can see the true soul of someone as an animal. Number two, they are actually animal people. Or number three, you know, just rhyming stuff. I'm not a predator, but I am a deadly animal in that, like a porcupine, for example.
I imagine whether he actually looks like or not, he probably has a crazy fucking hairdo. It's a solid big.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. He has the do, all right.
Then we check in with Yamamoto and Odakawa, who are trying to cut some sort of deal. And Odakawa reveals what he knows and to try and convince Yamamoto to join him in his plan. But instead, Yamamoto panics and tries to kill Odakawa instead.
The old belt strangulation.
Yes.
Like, it was like, hey, take a left here, driver. Take a right here. Go into this fucking building site. And I was just like, this is bad, Odakawa. Get up. Park the car, right? You lock the door, and then you go out your door and just fucking run. Just run, Odakawa. Just get out of there.
But luckily, for reasons that are as yet unclear, Shirakawa just happens to be at this building site and kicks the shit out of Yamamoto.
I chose that as a background because that was the most satisfying action thing that happened all this week. I was just like, yeah, fucking get him. And she kicks him so hard as to turn him to Odakawa's side.
Don't care, boy. It was just some kind of dance. You gotta apologize to everybody in Brazil of what you just said.
Then we get Odakawa and Shirasawa in the taxi, where they discover a new GPS has been put in.
How do they know where to find me again? It's like, the phone would have run out of battery. So at some stage, at some time, someone put in a longer life or like something that's just playing GPS in there to track me.
And it's him realizing, it's like, you fucking broke my window again. I got to get that replaced again. When my window broke before, That's when he fucking replaced.
Yes. I wonder whether she broke the window before and put the thing in to keep an eye an eye on him to be keep him safe.
I did like the simple metaphor of she's. I mean, like it's because she smashed in the window with a fucking brick, but she's sitting in the front seat now. It's just like, yeah, she's on his side, or at least that's the way it's been played.
Yeah,
I also get so pissed off that I didn't quite order car was time because I'm so pissed off that you got so much to say. But it is as well, even though they're angry at each other right now, they've become closer that they're dropped off. Yeah, few dents of, you know.
They're so angry they have to complain at each other, which means they have to talk to each other.
Yeah.
I didn't credit the theory people had before that she's an undercover cop, but it's a little bit closer if her just happening to be there.
Did you see that fucking kick, man? You went down!
And I was like, I can't see Tanaka in the state we've seen Tanaka thinking, oh, I need to put a better GPS in the taxi.
But similarly, how does he always know where to find them?
Well, that's the question: is whether that is Tanaka under the mask every time we see Tanaka under the mask.
Yeah.
But I think
I'm wondering now as well. After this, again, it's like, you know, I've watched ahead a little bit. I think I figured out what the Diamond Brothers. One is good, one's bad. I think. One is like being kind of shifty and was like, oh, he's very earnest and good and everything like that. But is that the case? I'm wondering now myself.
Yeah, could be. Like, just because one's on the take might mean he's not on the take for like the worst fucking reasons or something like that. Yeah.
We'll get to some of that next week. Those questions can be asked again next week.
Okay. But they do get the Mystery Kiss manager on board by saying, no, we're going to go through with this heist and you're going to go do your part in it. I just need you to slow it down a little bit.
Yes. And you might get
panic.
It's like protecting Mystery Kiss. Mystery Kiss
will be safe.
Is his motive.
Yeah.
In helping them. Then he goes.
Even if he gets arrested, you can just say it's like, "Oh, they coerced me into doing it, but you still did the crime." But Mystery Kiss will be unfucking related to the crime, according to Odakawa.
Odakawa, yes, we could question the logic of his plan next week. He goes to the sauna. Kakihara can't come with him because he's busy working two jobs to pay back the loan he owes. So he's there alone in the sauna with the tapir, who seems to know an awful lot about Odakawa.
Well, he literally says, "I had guys looking into you, and you were suspected of this, and I'm still 5% thinking you did it." But I like the simple thing of it was like, "Hey, how come no one else comes in here?" And he's like, "Cause you're a big, scary guy with a fucking back tattoo. That's why no one comes in here, dude. That's why it's always free in the evening." Funny.
Then Yano and Sekiguchi find Imai via cyberstalking. And this is where we get the reference Yano makes to him being a porcupine. And then we get Odakawa and Dobu, with Dobu explaining his plan, and it's going to be called Odd Taxi.
Odd Taxi.
He says the name to Odakawa. Like, Odakawa's like, "That's the stupid fucking name." Yeah. It's like, "No, it's really cool. Odd Taxi."
And as we're going through this, I'm like, Odakawa's plan seems awfully ambitious and is reliant on a lot of unreliable people to make it work.
Yeah, it's a lot of moving parts, and it's like Witcher Man's plan. It's called Odd Taxi because it's talking like we're like an odd pair of cards, but we need these odd cards in order to make the play work. He only has two moving parts to his plan. Yes. I guess three.
The diamonds. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but like. It's three people. Whereas Odakawa was like, there's so many things that could go. If one of those things goes wrong, you're in a lot of fucking trouble.
Yeah. And if one dude could flip for you, we'd say he won't flip back.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
Or flip some other way. It's very tenuous.
And then the pair of them get to look at the footage, but we don't.
He kind of tests him. It's like, "Hey, Odakawa, who's this?" And he's like, "I don't fucking know who that is." He's like, "That's the girl they fished up, isn't it?"
Dobu says that it's not the missing girl, who's the daughter of his boss's friend, who is Don Rocky. And then, so Odakawa says, oh, it must be the mystery kiss girl. And Dobu's like, yes, that's the only person who... That's the only person on the... She's the only person on the footage who is similar to the person missing. But they say, the pair of them... Well, Dobu says that it's not the missing girl. And Odakawa comes to the conclusion in his head that it's the mystery kiss girl. Why, when you get the final part of the episode, it's not her, you're left going, I'm not entirely sure what he means by that.
Yes. Like, has he put something together by that? Exactly.
And it's putting his even more into doubt. Who does he have in his wardrobe? Who does he think he has in his wardrobe?
I think he's just got an actual cat in his wardrobe.
Yeah,
I think he brought a cat in that night, and that's why he's seeing, in the same way that he sees his landlady as her dog, he's connected a cat he saw that night to the person.
To a person who he's given the cat's face, that kind of thing. And is that how he's figuring out stuff? He became a walrus because he's afraid of water. His doctor is apparently a big burly guy, so he's a gorilla, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, it's all there in the intro for you, you know.
Yeah, so that's why I think it would be the most cheeky thing to say that, oh, it was a cat all along. We were telling you every single episode.
Well, you were so dead set on that mystery that there was all sort of mysteries that were there as well. So you won't feel shortchanged. And like a magic trick, if you know how it works, it's not going to impress you.
Yeah, magic trick is how I describe this show quite a bit.
It's definitely a lot of sleight of hand and you not seeing the whole fucking picture.
I'd say with the gun last episode, for sure.
Yeah. Mm. You need to fucking remember things as well. Just small little details can become very important later on. It's just like, you know, small detail, but it's got a knock-on effect that's going to be fucking come like a fucking freight train a few episodes' time.
It's like you were saying, like, last episode, Brian, like, it's like, oh, should we be counting the shots every time we hear that gun go off? And it's like, how many people are shooting a gun at any given situation? That kind of thing.
Because it's not the same gun that shot. Because Dobie thinks he's been shot by the mask man, but it's not.
When he shot, give me back my gun.
It's a different gun. I thought it was one of the diamonds, but it might also have been Shirakawa.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly if she planted the GPS now, because she could have followed them there.
Yeah.
Then we get Yamamoto getting his instructions. Then we get a scene with Odakawa and Imai where he's explaining that you're probably going to be taken in the next 24 hours, so just do everything they tell you to. And I promise you, you'll be safe in the end. I'm like, Odakawa, why do you think you can make such that promise? And Imai's like rationalizing it by saying, well, I didn't have that billion yen before, so if I lose that billion yen, I'll just carry on loving Mystery Kiss. I'll just live my life as I was doing previously.
Yeah, like, the Mystery Kiss is going to get fucking, like, because they are involved in these crimes, so they're going to get completely arrested and taken apart, and that will ruin his life, and he won't have a billion yen if he lives. Probably he'll live just to see the band fall apart, and that will be the worst thing.
Yeah.
Is one of them so pure that it's just... Do you know this money is wasted on you, or you deserve it all the way, kid? This is really hard.
I think Odakawa thinks his plan is good and thinks he will be able to protect him and thinks all these things because he has this great sense of justice. But assuming that he sees people as animals, he does not have a clear grasp on reality. So it's like, that would be a thing that affects him.
Yeah.
Speaking
of which, Gariki's at Odakawa's school. Checking in on his school life with a armadillo.
I assume he's the current principal because it does scroll through a bunch of animal pictures. Which is great. Yeah.
And then the final thing is the news announced that they've identified the body, and it is the Mystery Kiss singer.
Which is weird because she seemed fine.
She seemed fine, though everyone had figured that out on her first appearance. Yeah. Because there was enough clues.
It's one thing, like they said, she said she's from a particular place that's famous for like fried chicken.
Yes.
Whereas the missing girl wasn't from the same place, I think.
Yeah.
So, that was pretty clear.
I need to go back and check if it was the same town or a similar town name, but that's also where Odakawa was from. So it's kind of surprising.
Oh, that's a good question.
I think so, yeah.
The one in the band who likes fried chicken is from Oita, and then
Oita. Let me just check.
The missing high school girl is from Narima City.
Yeah,
Narima.
I did also, because I was hoping it would reveal secrets, but I got a friend, Sweet Wizzle, to on Twitter to translate the tweet from the Don on your man's tablet when he was scrolling through it. I was just like, oh, fuck. And it was just, it doesn't matter to anything. He's just giving out on Twitter. Commentators are called pretentious, but it was offered as a position and there is demand. I'm doing this sitting in this seat for money. What are you amateurs commenting on news headlines for without being asked? Is there a demand in that? Who's watching? Is there money in it? Who? What on earth do we owe you? And it's just like, oh, he's just an old man whining on Twitter. Okay, never mind. No secrets revealed.
No. I believe the is it the second one of the wiretaps? There's like the three truths and a lie from the girls or something. And one of which is, I've committed a murder.
Yeah. Yeah, that one's still hanging on the podcast. I'm just like, that's important.
Well, it certainly will be, so let's check in next week.
I'll watch it after this.
As you get the bleakest episode yet next week.
Oh, great. Does it still have the theme tune going out, though?
It's only got about 50 seconds of the theme tune going in. But yeah, as the theme tune go down, but you don't get, it's got to cram a lot of in, so you don't get very much of the opening on next week's episode. Yes, because the preview definitely makes it look like that poodle did a murder. But you'll have to watch and find out whether that is the case. But yeah, most of the questions I had from this I just added to with even more details to the questions next week, so I'll get to them next week.
Yes, excellent.
Then we got Zombieland Saga Revenge, Episode 10, The Saga of How These Zombies Will Get Their Revenge. I think this is the thing I forgot to watch this week.
Oh no!
So someone else will have to recap it.
Well, basically, what it is, it's giving you the preamble to... Remember that gig they did where they went to like a 200,000-seater stadium, and they obviously could not fill it like a month after their big gig at the end of the first series. It is the kind of the trailer that led up to that. And Kotar was like, no, you gals, you're on fire right now. I know that you the fucking face of Saga. You'll be able to fill this thing, no problem. And, you know, it's kind of on. You're like the most legendary idols that from across the decades and centuries in some cases. So you can do what you want. You came back from the dead. It's just like, yeah, and like, yeah, actually, yeah, maybe we can do it. No, we've done everything else so far. It's like, yeah, we totally can. You cannot do it.
I like that. It's like, you're all legendary except for one of you. Yeah, you can totally do it. And they're kind of standing there in the open stadium. It's like, this is a big fucking stadium. And he's like, yeah. It's like, so, I mean, like, what's the deal with the tickets? We're doing like half online booking. And he's like, no, all at the gate. No one can pre-book the ticket. It's like, dude, no, don't fucking...
Oh, yeah.
Now, if you're trying to get rid of scalpers, that'll still catch you.
Now you're recapping it. I've definitely watched it, but I don't know whether I was paying... I might have been distracted during the first part. Because I remember the reveals towards the end, but I don't remember the details at the start. So carry on.
Yeah. It just, well, like, you know, this... as well, this was the stage that I was killed on by a lightning strike. So
that's why she was so distracted as to not question him on this. She was more so, I was like, okay, I can do this because I can't die again, so it's not a problem. I can conquer my fear of getting hit by lightning. that doesn't go well because we know how the season started.
So they had to go on and get real jobs, and then manager everyone's, you know, just crawled into the bottle and just about found its way out, as we know. But now they've come back. They've gotten a bit more of a foothold again. They have the radio show. One of them's a YouTube sensation. What's going to be in this gig, boss? Well, that giant stadium we didn't sell out last time, we're doing it again. This is, why do you do this for, man?
A revenge is to do it this time, but good. That's what we're doing.
So how does he get confronted by the journalist?
he's standing in the like stands of that stadium, like dramatically with his cloak flapping in the wind. And the journalist kind of goes like, hey, I got files on most of these girls and they're all fucking dead. And he's like, so what? What are you going to do about it? Because it's like, shit, I've been absolutely called out.
And then the final reveal is that the deadline is actually some prophecy that he has to put this concert on to say otherwise Saga is doomed.
Yeah.
If you do not raise Saga's level of knownness above a certain level, then disaster portends. As we see, like a big storm's a brewing, and the immortal barman, I'm just going to say now, is keeling over. It's like, it's happening now!
But there's a, like, there are a lot of things in there with that same barman as well. It's like, oh, you've come a long way from that gloomy kid I met 12 years ago. It's just like, yep, you're Sakura's classmate. You were so, like, distraught at her sudden passing that you did. You just fell in with this dude. Can they put it off? I don't know. But there were some like nice things in there in that pyramid that go get real jobs at the point. What the fuck are you supposed to do? Like, when Kotaro is the manager, he takes care of everything else for us. You know, we can't even go outside with the fucking zombies. What do we do? And then Tai comes in and she's just coming back from the shops and she has, like, you know, she's done her best at putting the makeup on. It's more like a clown face, but she's, you know, got some things, you know, some squid snacks and all the other like messages from the shop. It's like, yeah. Like, Tai is trying, you know, and she's saying that, might not be like the best job, but if you believe you can do it. You just gotta try, you know, you gotta start from somewhere. It's like, fun, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, we can do this, yeah, let's do it. So, join them then. They've been doing their own makeup, you know, it's like getting real jobs now at the factory, at the fish cutting place. Everyone's saying, you're awful pale, are you all right? Everyone's, oh, yeah, fine.
That was a good bit because it kind of led into how they got into the jobs and everything. But I was kind of thinking like how this is going to end. Well, they have to succeed because this is partially an advertisement for the Saga region.
Yeah.
And the other thing is like they could just turn to the audience. It's like, we need you to believe in us. Clap your hands. You know, and I'm just like, okay, yeah. They have to get out of it and they have ways out of it and they literally have introduced immortal magic. So, yes. You know.
And I'm wondering if like revealing that they're zombies will somehow gain more interest in the concert and people will come to see for themselves whether they are zombies.
Start incorporating that into the floor show. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's one hell of a storm though.
Yes.
Their house has gotten blown away. It is our house, I think it is.
Yeah. It looks like it sinks into the fucking ground or something. Mm.
Well, that'll just be a funny gag of them just going like, oh shit, we're late for the concert.
dear.
Then we got Dino Zenon, episode 11, What Wish Can't Come True? In which, nobody's really fixed, but they're a little bit more fixed to where they were at the start of the series, except Galba.
It's going all right.
Everything's going okay. We're out of kaijus, everyone. Everyone, okay. Let's split up and try and destroy humanity in our own ways. sorry, Dinozenon guys. You guys can go home now. Everyone, give back your toys. Give me back the action figure, and I'm going to put them in this bag.
They're not going to give up, though. Like, all the eugenicists are like they're getting into drunken brawls. One of them's already been all of them are trying to steal a cop's gun.
When he said, "It's like I'm going to kill them myself, all humanity," and it's like he gets immediately arrested. I knew that happened off screen, but it was really funny to confirm that.
Yeah, because it's the thing of him saying, "Oh, I'm just going to kill humanity myself," and then you hear the story of like, "There's this guy who's trying to steal a policeman's gun and has been arrested," and then you're like, "Okay, we know exactly who that is."
Even the reveal of them, like his friend looking at the phone, is like, "Cool haircut, though." Yeah,
and it's like, "Oh, yeah, he's just an asshole. He's an asshole with or without Kaiju."
The fact that he's
an ineffective asshole is funny. Yeah.
Yeah, and I like that Duke is like he goes to apologize to Galba. But Gamma's not having any of it. Mugina goes and tells Koyomi that she still hates him. And
even though he's trying to apply for a job now, he's got like the Skype interview fucking jacket on and just the regular pants.
Well, he's just taking his photo.
The Reef one sets him up though. It's just like, no, so like, no, or fighting, you know, do you hate me? If I'm saying, no, I'm like, you know, I can understand how it is for fun, or giant robots versus kaiju. You're just doing your job. It's just like, I still fucking hate you though.
Like, hey, come on, you can't do that. You can't talk about
he's trying to move on and your destiny and just throw that in my face. That's bullshit.
Is this the first episode we see Koyomi's mum?
We didn't realize it was in his house.
Yes.
It's just his bedroom.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, hey, mom, where's my suit?
Yeah.
Because his cousin is just like, wait, what are you doing? It's like, I'm filling out my resume.
Yes. And then she's like, I guess I got to go back to school. But...
Yeah. And that's the thing as well, is that like most of the rest of them are ready to move on, even Gamma to an extent. But she's just like, no, I was part of the team. It's part of the team. We're going to fight monsters together. No, we can't end like this.
No, but Knight and Second, we're going to have to take Goldburn. We're going to have to move on, because kaiju shouldn't be around somewhere. Here. Yeah, we're like the littlest hobos, but we're kaiju.
We're kaiju and we have a giant golden dragon.
Yes. So yeah, she doesn't quite go back to school this time, but she flies
she
around
gets
with gold.
Up to the gate. That's pretty close.
She's put her uniform on. Yeah, so it's like everyone's like making the right steps, except for Galma, who's still poisoned.
He was already always dying. That's why he's so fucking skinny, because he should have been feeding off kaiju energy, and he has not been eating his kaiju in the morning. No. Even of the two kids, like, who are just like, hey, so we don't hang out with the guys anymore, so are we still gonna hang out?
Tell you what, I'm gonna go visit my sister's grave. Which you met says to her parents, just like, you're going to the grave. It's just like, and dad's going, what time?
And I'll give you a lift. Kind of thing.
They've been waiting for this to happen for so long, almost.
Because she says as much, like, she gets, I brought, it's a weird first date, but a technical first date, but it's kind of like, yeah, I knew you'd kind of understand this, and dad seemed happy that it's the first time I've actually come down to visit the grave. It's her kind of getting closure over it, that kind of thing.
Also,
and even him admitting is like, hey, it's like, you don't have a shitty family situation like me. It's like, yeah, my mom's gonna marry some guy, I don't fucking know him, and probably because she's going out with him. Is he a jerk? It's like, he's all right, I guess.
I was
like,
gonna say, it's
really
than...
nice easiness to it. It's like, no, kind of like, just like, don't even need to say it to each other, just kind of look some way, and then, like, you know, they see them in a smile, and say, so it's like, oh, this is kind of cute, and it's just like, when. Yogi Dennis is walking down the canal outside of him, and she says, for that, I like you, will you go out with me? Once that's the way to do it, man. You just want to do it.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You know, you got something going. You know, there's a spark there. You're just gonna come out and say it. That's a really good way to do it.
Ah, but before this, though, they figured out that Galma's a 5,000-year-old mirror, the mummy mirror. If you got to the Funimation website on the day, it now says mummy. I did go and check it.
I don't know, like, when Mado has got its own fucking character, and then mummy, is this done in katakana, like, or there is an equivalent, like, one for it. I'm not sure what
it's mirror. There. It's mirror. Yeah, they're saying mirror for mummy, and I guess, I think it's written in katakana, so somebody might have thought they were. Anyway, they fixed it now. I was taking it.
They must have been so confused by, like, taking the footage from the original show and warping it with CG, so you can't tell it's live action, even though you can totally still tell it's live action.
Yes. Yeah, straight out of episode 18 of Gridman. As
it's
is
the
all...
same audio, even, yeah.
Yes, yeah, it is. Yeah. I'm curious as to whether the broadcast version just had the live action stuff, and also the reason why it was warped, because I can see why it would be warped for Funimation, because Toko HD have got the Gridman series, so there might be some conflict in using it. But it might also be warped on the Japanese version, because the actress whose voice you hear has not acted since Gridman, and I wonder whether it'd be hard finding her to get the rights to reuse
the
likeness,
use
their image. In an anime, however many years later it's been, almost 30 at this point.
I thought as well it was just like, here is like a Predator style mummy like vision, as you know, and as well like a hazy recollection.
It might also be hiding the fact that he's throttling her as that's what it's hiding.
True.
Because he's like, in the story he thinks she's the princess, and she's explaining what had actually happened to him. That he'd been poisoned by people who were jealous of his relationship with the princess, and that he died, and then the princess took her own life. And
to follow him into death,
yes,
I believe,
but,
the way
and buried him with all these things, such as this dragon that he's carrying around with here. So, yeah, there's a good chance that there is no princess for him to. He's been operating on a belief that is entirely false.
And then, that's the thing that he kind of can't move on with, because it's like, okay, I thought she'd get resurrected because me and the other kaiju eugenicists got resurrected. And he's like, yeah, it's probably because your relation to the kaiju rather than anything else. And he's like, shit. Okay, I guess it's just me then.
Yeah. And also the stuff they find about him is just photos straight out of the episode as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this really just gives... It's an argument that the entire series is a sequel to a single episode of Gridman.
That's fine, though. I think
it's fine.
Like,
I think
you're tying it back to it, isn't it? Like, you gotta go through the entire
particularly
Gridman,
because
canon to figure what's going on. It's either watch this one thing and then you have are privy to it, and as well as it's like someone that's like, yeah, that was just spinning that out as well from that one episode to make a whole series out of it as well. Don't discount too that. Oh, we've got this lovely kind of comparatively low stakes drama going on between all the kids and everybody else on the Dino Xenon team. So it's like, oh yeah, this is that was at the starting point of it, and we're going to come back to it now. We're going to get more towards the end. There's been so much great stuff in between, just like to bulk it out. It's feels very solid, you know. This is for taking one episode and spinning it out into a whole series. It just feels surprisingly like they've got a lot of mileage out of it. But that's just the kind of quality of what they added to it, too.
And speaking of things taken from that episode, yes, their declaration of love is interrupted when Shizumu shows up. And he's going to use their emotions to turn himself into a kaiju. Specifically, the kaiju from that episode of Gridman.
I kept one in my pocket inside myself for this occasion.
Mecha Bagheera.
I also have strong emotions. Wah!
But yeah, I'm still wondering whether this, him turning into a kaiju, is some effort to heal Galma. Whether that's what it's going to be turning out to be.
Like, what is he? Because he wasn't with the...
He wasn't,
no.
We don't really know what his motivation is, I suspect. The final episode will reveal this to us. Gridman will show up and fix everything.
He's the Gridman.
Because Grid Knight's showing up and going like, hey, where's the bag of toys? We don't need all the lads here. I'll just put them all on as armor. And it's like, oh god, no, I'm getting my ass kicked. Never mind. That's not going to work.
Because I'm wondering if the thesis it's going on is, rather than in Gridman where it's like, oh, Gridman is here to fix this problem, this is operating on the idea that fighting kaiju fixes your problems, so therefore kaiju have a place in this world. Though, of course, in doing that, it fixes four individuals' problems, and in the meantime, destroys loads of buildings and causes problems for loads of unseen people in this world.
Not including when they were deleted and flattened. This is the most building destruction we've seen so far, because you see buildings get thrown and then crack in two, that kind of thing. Yeah.
You kind of wonder as well, because so in Gridman, the monsters are inside the computer and they cause problems in the real world, right? So you gotta go in there and fight them, you know.
Yes.
And often they represent some kind of trauma or anxiety you might have. So what if this is inside someone's head right now again, and you can't just settle for just moving past this trauma? You gotta face it and reckon with it. So you got to kaiju in there. You got the kaiju that represents this problem you have. You gotta finally defeat it.
Anyway,
the kind of struggle for living is what keeps you going. You got to have that struggle inside yourself, that drive, that motivation.
Unfortunately, it's too much for Grid Knight and Dino Xenon and Goldburn to handle. As we go into our final episode, with them facing defeat at the hand of this terrible monster.
The monster just keeps laughing as well, which is a real dick move, you know? It's making everyone feel bad.
Apparently this monster is Gagula, is what they're calling it here.
What's it represent in the show, or what was it in the episode? I mean,
Robot Mummy.
Yeah, he was using it to bring the mummy back to life in the real world. And then his bespectacled nerd was giggling along with his evil alien overlord at how much trouble it was causing.
Well, if it was trying to fix the mummy in that, it could be trying to fix the mummy in this one as well, like you said. Likely, yeah.
Gotta have something to motivate you for. Gotta give something to live for.
Mm-hmm.
Then we've got Back Arrow episode 23. Does destruction rain from the heavens? I've got written one note for this. Rondo of Ruin.
Rondo.
it's a good fucking thing.
Yeah, they're going to go off, going to go kill God or Negamancer for his crimes.
There's not even any walls anymore because why? The illusion's gone, so why leave them up? But also, the big old spikes made of their dead friends have disappeared because Rudolph has turned them into a spear.
Is Rudolph riding a bunch of other...
Yes.
They're like the guys who were like forming his throne of...
Yeah, his sex slaves. Yeah.
So they're his throne of Bryheights now too.
Yeah. Weird kink stuff. But yeah, he's back. And they're like, how'd you come back? He's like, because God fucking said I should. So yeah, that's how it works. I'm here to kick everyone's ass. Also, my Bryheight that I go into in my Bryheight is here again. Also, your one's back. Remember, she can't die. Yeah. So.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, they pin... the big combined robots to the ground with this spear, and the way they get out of it is Bacco makes an apology to all the people he killed, and they just release him. And I was like, excellent, this is just what I want to see from a Nakashima plot.
I thought it was a really, really good speech. Like, the idea that he's saying is like, hey, sorry, I fucked everything up for you, you got killed because of me, but it's, I think it's the line that was something like, the weight of my sins drives me forward, yes, or something like that. Like, I fucked up and I did bad things, but I will use that as momentum to do better, to protect the world you lived in.
I'm not going to let myself off easy for this. I'm going to keep on living for you. You can't around alive right now.
Yeah, and it was just like, when your man tries to give a scientific in-universe explanation, it's like, it's love. Love is what saved the day. And he's like, well, yeah, technically, I suppose.
Talking of love.
So on and so forth.
Yeah.
Polarity.
talking of love, before they set off, we get the bit with Ren and Shu and Kai.
Oh, my God. And she's like, that's so good.
Don't put your head, like, basically saying, yeah, don't pin your hopes on falling in love with this guy. This guy doesn't understand love.
Because she's chatting to them while they're having their chat. Because he's like, hey, I'm going to go fight God. Here is a list of laws you should enact because you're going to be the new king of Rekka. And he's like, I'm going to fight God with you. The fuck are you talking about? Yes. So you give that to me when we've killed God. It's fine.
Yes.
You can't fool me. I know you got the same scar from our bond from when we were young.
Yeah. And when Rin kind of shows up, she starts talking to him, and then the guy she fancies says, oh, are you declaring your love to the other guy here? And it's like, oh my God, you guys are so stupid, says Rin. It's just like, they are dumb as fuck, but also they are gay. So it's not going to work, Rin, sorry.
I definitely was like, okay, that's closer and closer to my theory of like why she's so angry.
Being the only straight person on the show.
Yeah.
And in love with one of the gay couples in the one part of the gay couples in the show. Yeah, sucks to be her. Very frustrating.
Yeah, so they're going to they leave behind Prax and the other generals. So they're having to deal with this Rondo of Ruin, which is like a giant... it's Rakuho, isn't it? That's what they were.
The big Rakuho. It's sort of like... it's
God
like
bullets.
Yeah, it's like, you know, rotating, and it's like kind of screwing in the entire landscape around itself.
The walls are kind of like pushing in on top of it. So it's like this pops in, it screws it so that the walls close in on the entire fucking world. And everyone in the world is like, oh, this sucks, because the lads do get to see their village that they grew up in destroyed because they lived on the edge.
Yeah.
And it's just like, everyone we like is here, so we need to destroy this. And obviously, our guy who was literally just scream murdered in a laser beam earlier in the episode, he comes back, he's like, hello, it's me again. I've come back. You can't possibly defeat God. And as our strategist points out, he's just saying that to stall for time. If there was no way of stopping him, he just let it fucking happen. He knows we can stop him. And he's like, oh, shit, they're on to me.
I know. It's great how he keeps doing that. It's like, haha, you fools. You definitely shouldn't have tapped a glowing repeat point. He's bluffing. That's a glowing repeat point. What? No, no, stop that.
Also, he turns into a devil. Rudolph turns into a devil this episode. We should mention that as
well. Time to release my devil power that I had the whole time, I guess.
Put some clothes on and grow some horns.
How they destroy the... We just call it the Rondo Ruin because it's a fucking cool name.
Yes.
Is they turn back Arrow into an arrow using methods we've already seen. So it's like, he's still an arrow. So
yeah, basically cool. Ren, Kai, and Arrow fire themselves at the Rondo and destroy it.
So Ren's going to be the bull, Kai's going to be the arrow, and I guess...
They fire all three of them. All three of them go to get... Because he's holding the sword.
But the physicality, like the different colors of the... Your man's final, ultimate move of turning himself into an arrow.
Trinity Marshall Arrow is three times as good as Zetsu's, because it's got three of them doing it.
And they still do the black hole fucking thing that he does to destroy the Rondo of Ruin. But he's just like, they're just going to send down another one. He's like, that's our way out. Come on,
we should also mention when they're sent down. When they're sent down, we hear the baby crying as well.
You hear the baby crying nice and fucking loud in case you weren't wearing earphones watching it the last day when they got out,
I mean, if this just turns out to be a 24-episode metaphor for a baby being born and then the baby looks like a baby back arrow, I'm going to be so delighted.
That's fine. I'm fine with it. Like, this show can do whatever the fuck it wants. It's mad as a bag of hammers and it's great. Like,
well, we're getting to the end. There's definitely some fun Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost stuff going on. For real.
Yeah. Sure.
They blow through the next Rondo of Ruin, and then they're outside.
Blow them all up.
Where they find the universe.
All of them, and they're like, one's about to get launched together. Quickly destroy that, and then Bit's like, why destroy that one? Well, we can destroy all of them.
But they're like, okay, but won't we need one of these to like drill back into here so we can go back home eventually? And it's like, we'll figure it out when we get to God.
Yes.
So they destroy all of them. Yes.
Yeah. And then they get to God.
God is like a cool... It's that guy from the start of the show where he explains the premise of the show. It's Back Arrow, but like with a beard and a deeper voice.
It's the narrator, my God. Yeah.
Yes.
And Back Arrow, what does he say? He's like, oh, of
the
course,
final boss is me?
I love the show, man.
And I was like, well, okay, Loki and this did it in the same week.
Ooh, or...
And just like how, like, at this point, this isn't like a massive surprise to Back Arrow. It's not like he's shocked.
Like, it seemed like it was going that way.
Yeah. Final boss is
me. After seeing Giant Chew, that doesn't surprise you anymore.
Nah. We've got maximum level of crazy and we've gone way past it.
Oh, and God's got a giant dark version of Back Arrow's Bri-Hai as well.
Is that even surprising? I don't know. That makes sense. Yeah. It does, multiple eyes. It's got multiple of those little wingy things. So, sure.
It's when we see like a better image of what the Lins look like from outside than the drawing that Shu did in the... It looks very, like, organic, which does make me think, I was like, is that baby crying literally a baby somehow?
Like if it's a metaphor for life in some kind of fucking way. I don't fucking know.
It turns out our heroes were the villains all the time. whatever it is, it moves at a cracking pace because it's a Nakashima script and we're in the penultimate episode, so therefore it's got to keep on whipping up the escalation further and further.
It's like you were saying, dude, I'm going to miss this when it's gone because this is it's such fun.
Like that's this and Dinah Zenon was landed on the Friday. Yeah. So it's saying, robot power hour, and both going to be gone away this Friday. It's like, oh man.
It's going to be a huge fucking lack of it, all right.
Well, that just means like there's plenty of other cool robots.
Yeah, there's a cool robot coming along, I believe, next week, isn't there? Jet Jaguar.
Ah, yes.
Jet Jaguar. Punch. I hope it still has a theme tune. It better.
Knowing them, will have some variants.
Yes.
No, like a remix, for sure.
Then we got Dragon Quest, The Adventure of Dai, episode 36, The Superior Being versus Chiyu.
Dear.
A lot of heart, that rap.
It is, and really oversells what happens in the episode in that title. But hey, this might be the only episode he gets his name put in the title, so let's give it to him. So I'm trying to remember which point that Dai gets swallowed by the bad guy. Like,
he tries fighting. Fighting him, but like he's running out of juice real quick, and this fucker is regenerating as well. So it's like, he's got all that fucking cheap optional boss fucking stuff going on here. So they just fucking eat him. Then he grows back his pincer hand. He's like, oh, no, got him.
Well, he puts him in his secondary mouth.
He's got his mouth in his chest as well.
So he can chew him. Well, he doesn't actually chew him. He's like, even the king points out, he swallowed him whole. And I was like, well, if he swallowed him whole, it'll be fine. If he chewed him, we'd be in trouble.
So we gotta get him out. Pop is on the scene. It's like, check out what I learned. Five finger flares. Oh, I'm going to do three, but I'm getting there. I had a whole hand eventually.
I appreciated that it was commented on that it was Flazard's attack, because I was like, I think that's Flazard's attack. But I don't want to have to go back in the wiki and check. And then thankfully they said it was Flazard's attack. I was like, that's good writing.
Yeah, the show is like cracking on pretty good pace. But like, even in this episode, Pop does kind of go to the king. It's like, the king's like, oh, what happened, Dai? It's like, he can only keep up that form for a limited amount of time. It's like, okay, just in case you missed last week, they're going to catch you up on everything.
I think it's probably because of the way it was written. You want it to like assume like this could be somebody's first chapter of as a kid. Yeah. So you want to bring them up to speed generally on what the deal is. And so, yeah, Pop's plan is that they're going to make him throw up Dai.
Gross.
Even though he's regenerating, he's still running out of breath. And when he's breathing, he's got to breathe out through even the mouth of his chest. Yes. So that's when we're going to get him.
Yes. So Chiyu comes up with his new attack, and which involves him spinning into a ball and launching himself, just as Dai had suggested in the previous episode, that he shouldn't be trying to use his fists because his arms are incredibly short. But you can still throw yourself and headbutt them. Yeah,
doesn't gotta be cool. This has to work. And if it works, and it makes it cool.
Yes, and he hits him, and Dai's half thrown up. But then he is so proud of his attack, he just keeps on yakking rather than making a second attack.
You gotta follow through. It's very important.
And so it has to fall down to Mom to save the day, as she gets some advice from that guy in a cloth who's clearly her grandmaster. To use the secret technique, because they can't break out otherwise out of this jail, and they're being poisoned as well at this point.
Yeah, they're
like paralytic poisoning. Yes. Yeah.
It's really clever. It's like they haven't like discounted that. Oh, she's changed class, but she still knows how to do like some healing spells from her old class. So, and that's why she can just kind of coat herself in like an aura of healing magic, so she can get this way paralyzed, and then also by some similar application, I think, of that same force, punch her fucking way out of it.
The reason you multiclass is to get like abilities from different fucking classes, and she's got healing and fighting, so she can be a frontline fighter that heals herself. It's fucking flawless.
She's busted pushing and she just goes up, one, boom, mid-heal, boom, mid-heal. It's like she's just on the scene, attending everybody. Also, I'm going to fight this monster with my bare hands.
Knocks one of his horns off. He's already lost his claws. Knocks his horn off, and he's like, ha ha ha, I could regenerate any damage. Then he's like, oh, what? Hang on, that's not regenerated. And that is her secret technique.
I gotta watch out for this lady.
Is that she has a punch that cannot be regenerated, the damage of it.
one more, she in there.
I'm curious to see this fucking master that decides, how am I gonna fucking infiltrate this martial arts tournament? I'll disguise myself as a ghost. Fucking perfect. Flawless.
It's great.
Well, I mean, like, it's the same guy who fought a mouse and goes like, I will teach you Kung Fu, mouse. Which is like, I like this guy. He's a weirdo.
Master Roshi put on a wig and that was good enough. So I think this guy's gone above and beyond throwing the whole sheet over him. So.
I think my favorite bit is Chiyu being brave by stepping on his tail, like telling his tail to behave and not be a coward.
Taking control of his fear.
Fighting his biological urge to flee as a rat. Because I was like, oh, I was like, when it got to that bit, I was like, did they just like Gamba so much that they wanted to stick a Gamba-like character in their comic? Good choice. And obviously, I think the thing it does now is it permanently removes Pop from the comedy relief character, because you put another comedy relief character in the show.
We need a guy who can be like the main comedy relief. Okay.
Yeah. So now Pop's not at the bottom of the pile. We've got Chiu here to be the worst member of the team.
Yeah. Well, when Pop's turning around Five Finger Flare, so he's doing some high level magic.
Exactly. Yeah.
The Krillin of the group forever. Like, come on.
Mm-hmm. Unlike Krillin, who gets to be the Krillin of the group forever.
He's got a hot wife, so
it is.
He's a good father. He's one of the two good fathers on the show.
yeah, possibly. Mm. And he got to throw his stinky shoe as an attack. His stinky dad shoe. Then we've got My Hero Academia episode 100, The New Power and All for One.
Didn't if you watch this one was I think it's just going to be information I already know anyway. So.
It's a lot. It's basically a lot of it was. He's not. I keep wanting to call him Jason Momoa, but that's not his name. the guy who can copy people's powers.
Oh, Monoma.
Yes,
nothing alike. I don't know what you mean.
yeah, phonetically similar. Surname.
I like the way like it basically went over that him drawing a blank is he immediately identifies Midori. He's like, your power is a power storing one, right? And he's like, what? It's fucking, that's the secret. It's like, no, because like I only get it for like, what does he get it for, 3-5 minutes, something like that?
Yeah, 10 minutes he's extended it to, I think he said.
Yeah, 10 minutes. So I can extend, I can build power for 10 minutes, whereas like that's useless. Yes. Basically.
So he's like, if me, I copied Fat Gum's power, it's no I'm good because so... he isn't fat, so he can't use the power conversion.
So it's the idea that like it's a blank for me in that it doesn't work for me, but it's still like a razor head. It's kind of like how about you go try it out in the little kid with the horn. He's like, okay, let me just copy her power. Grew a horn. It's like, yeah, I can't do nothing about that, because again her power is a power storing power and then a big release of it.
Yeah.
And he's so, like, damn, I thought you could learn how to do it as a more adept kid and teach her how to use her own power. Not quite.
Yeah, we briefly see the kids who failed their exam finishing off that. just so we could get that they've got their licenses now, and then they can go and fight some purse snatchers who used his carbonation quirk.
I like that whole scene. It was nice to see as a big action bit, but the whole like All Might driving them home from the exams and going like, dude, you've only had your exams for half an hour. And Bakugo goes like, well, how long does it fucking take before this thing kicks in? Because we're going, we're doing it.
Yes. Then they hand off the villains to Banana Man. No, what's his name? Slip and Slide. I can't remember. Slide and Go.
Slide and Go. Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, is he named after that fucking slide? Probably not for legal reasons.
Yes,
he can be.
I was just thinking, and again, because it's like the comics and everything, I was like, did like Crawler get like super handsome? Like Desperate Dan?
Different powers, yeah. No,
he's still sliding around, but no.
Yeah, I just forgot that that guy shows up this early.
He does, yeah. It was nice to see it.
I'd forgotten. I'd remember the carbonation power and the fight with the carbonation, but I hadn't remembered that they hand it off to him at the end.
Yeah. It's fairly enjoyable, but like you say, if you're at the comic, it's a lot of the same stuff you kind of seen before. There's some fun background stuff with the other kids, because I guess we have to give them something to do.
Yeah, and there's like the review of what they did in the previous episode from their test. But yeah, I wonder if it's going to be a bit of treading water next week. I wonder if they're going to start off the My Villain Academia at the start of the next season.
No, next week's the Christmas episode, dude. Did you not see it?
Yes, I forgot it's the Christmas episode.
Yeah. Merry Christmas, everyone! Christmas next week. It comes sooner every year.
Which that was the point I was like, okay, was this meant to have aired last October? And
timing wise, that sounds right.
I think about Odd Taxi as well. That's a similar situation.
Yeah.
Never mind. We get to watch it now. And then we've got Welcome to Demon School of Rubicon, Episode 9, Studying in the Netherworld, in which we learn that despite how beloved Aruma is and how great he seems at various things, he has never been good at studying. And he's
to be fair, like all human history, science, and religion he's learned is incorrect in the demon yes. world. So it's just like, that's true. He doesn't know how anything works here.
Even but, cleric gets yes. better marks than he does.
Yes.
And she doesn't get very good marks.
But from what we know of Aruma's life on Earth, he did not seem to be at school for a lot of it.
Yeah.
He seemed to be mainly working in terrible jobs that his parents had put him in.
But he has learned some of the other skills, which is why he was so good at helping out the yes. entire faculty and staff at school, was how to get the classroom in the first place. So, really, he can't be good at everything. He can damn well try.
But luckily, there turns out to be one thing he's really good at, and he gets 100% on, and that is mythology.
Human mythology.
Yes.
True or
how
false?
How many wings does a human have? None. Correct. Says the living book as well. I did like that.
Yes.
That's a fun visual. But it's just like, how do you know so much about weird, obscure shit, Aruma? It's like, I don't know, just lucky, I guess. Because you have as kind of going like, oh, I guess Aruma can't be good at everything, but that's why he impresses me more. And then Aruma is good at something. Aruma's good at something. I'm impressed even more. It's like, you can't.
Yeah, Alice is so clearly in love with him. If it wasn't any doubt of it before, but this episode is like...
Well, at the start of the episode, himself and Clara like clinging onto him, and everyone going like, "Geez, guys, get a room."
Yes,
it's just like, yeah,
we're afraid he might turn bad again. We like that side of him too, but we like this side of him as well. Whoa, we're very confused.
Mm-hmm. And yes, we see that this book is written by Balam Shichiro, or Baram Shichiro, I think they've, which is probably the correct one. Yeah, so, and then the class they go to, he's the stand-in teacher at the very end. And he is a long-haired man in a mask with bird legs. And
he's ripped.
He's
a bit like Immortan Joe from Mad Max.
He is a bit,
I can see that. I think it's the hair is helping there as well.
Yeah. You don't get it from this episode, but if you look at his character sheets, he's got terrible posture due to the fact that he has bird legs.
Yeah. It is Balam, because that's the demon in Lesser Q of Solomon.
Okay.
He like grabs them with vines and then sits them all on his lap. Of which Aruma seems happy because he wants to meet this guy because he loves this. Alice
this was a test that he got 100% on. Aruma's on the combat high of getting 100% in his test.
Oh yes.
Usually he'd be like, oh, gee, thanks, guys. But he's like, yeah, you think I could do that? You know, it's just like, he's confident
it's
now.
Turned him, being a success has turned him into an idiot, I believe the narrator explains. Alice is terrified and Clara is just like treating it like a ride, being spun around by these vines. Also, we get a new member of the Battler. I forgot all about that element as well.
Oh yeah. This is my wife.
That was funny. Everything that guy says is very funny. I hate him. I don't want to be around him. But like watching him just like mutter away to himself constantly. Very, very funny.
Oh, yes.
It's a creep who cursed
Amory.
And Amory even. And
I'm sending him over to you, Aruma, because I need to send him to a trustworthy battler because he's not working out in the student council because he's just being a creep all the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's the right fit there because he is interested in the thing they're supposed to be studying in that battler. A magical apparatus.
It's just unfortunate that he's put so many of his anime figures on their fucking shelves for equipment.
Yes.
It's been very crudely taped to the plate outside their club room as well. So it's like, yeah,
he immediately jump at the main desk. It's like, this is my desk.
And the way they treat him as their lesser, even though he's in a year higher than them. I'm pleased we got to Balam because I he's a great character. He is quite the fun character, and it's the handy of like because they had all those teachers who give their signatures based on the student council's recommendation that allows them to introduce teachers we didn't see in that arc.
We didn't show everyone. It's just like some people signed off screen. This is one of them.
Yeah, so that's where it all left off with them in his capable hands / bird legs. But yeah, because everyone was fleeing the class, weren't they? Because everyone's afraid of him.
Because it was supposed to be another teacher's class, but he was subbing in, and he's crazy.
Oh, yes. Whoa. It's demonic history and mythical zoology. That's the mythical zoology is what the human studying is all about. Yeah, because I'd forgotten that element of the storyline of, like, the general populace of hell doesn't believe in humans.
Yeah, they all sing that it's like, we want to eat humans, they are our food, and those kind of things. It's like, yeah, but has anyone ever seen a human? It's like, no, never.
Yeah, so.
Say when they roar, it sounds like leaving some tits and all the hens around in a barrel. It's got four legs and like a spare legs, and kind of just kind of lip up on you like suddenly, you know. It's got four eyes but no eyebrows.
Dear.
And then finally, it is Thunderbolt Fantasy Sword Seekers 3, Episode 11, Distant Song.
Ooh, it's all gone wrong.
Yeah, things kick off, but it's like wrapped up literally pretty quickly. But that's just for shit to go down, to go wrong soon, yeah.
Shang Buhan immediately gotten a drop on by Xing Hai. Nope, she's whipped him. She's got Lord Tavern to paralyze him from saying, ha-ha, gotcha. When Lin Zetsu was there and when Wong Kan Yeon has been stabbed, it's like, oh, no, shit, it's all gone forth. It's like, yes. Now, like, what's up on the Pi Miao? It's like, I'll be holding on to this sword, and thank you very much. Fun saying, whoa, hold on, what's the deal here? Fun saying, oh, what if we gotta give this to our master? That was a whole deal, right? Unless you don't want me to do this. Fun said, no, hang on. I can tell you what, you don't kill him off just yet, don't cut off Shang Bohan just yet.
Because there's a couple of swords in this, I don't know what the fuck they do. We gotta
know what's inside it. And say, you keep him there and we'll swap you, like, I don't know, two swords out of this. No. If you want to do that, I want these four swords out of that. Three. Son. No.
He's like, if I'm going to negotiate for that amount of swords, I got to talk to the boss first. So, yeah. And they're just like, they're trying to negotiate over magical swords. So he leaves the sword index in the capable hands of the general. Who he's then squealing onto his boss, going like, "Hey, I think the general's gonna fucking turn on us, dude."
Okay, and the boss has happened not too much. This, so you think that he is going to flip based on this thing now? But as we're talking about behind his back, so how can I trust you either? You know,
also he's a really good general. So if he did this, A, he'd do it in a way that you wouldn't have noticed, and B, if he did it for the purpose of you noticing it, this you being here is part of his plan. So it's probably fine. Just like, fucking, okay. And the boss gives him a real talking down to him. And kind of the thing I was like, if I can get him on side, though, he'll be like my best lieutenant. Says the guy who's like his most loyal lieutenant. It's like, dude, don't do this to yourself.
Is this really just underscoring you're the second, or not even second, you're the third or fourth banana here. You barely factor in. You're just a little weasel boy. Don't be getting notions about yourself because you think you've pulled one over on him. You have not.
He lets him in on the plan and he says, you're the integral part of this plan. Like, if he goes wrong, you're there to fucking clean up house after. But other than that, like, you are not important to the greater scheme. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, last locked up in the dungeon to have the Shang Buhan inside a box in a coffin.
So in a like, magical coffin that drains his energy or something like that.
We need to puppeteer him any further this episode. So we just gotta rattle the box.
Yeah, they're herself and her sword sister are discussing the plan when they hear a monk going, it's like, hey, that sounds like my girlfriend. Is that my girlfriend in there? And she's like, oh, fuck, quick, throw me on the ground. Convince him is like, yeah, I was just here on the ground in this cell.
My princess. We reunited at last.
He's trying to make out with a sword.
Yeah. Let's chain of one saying, that's my girlfriend. Let me out. Wait, no, this is my girlfriend, my princess. And she's like, anyways, we have this plan we're trying to enact here. And I think, you know, if you help us out with this, like give some smooches, we'll be something for anything but you, my princess. You know I would follow you until the end of the world, to the end of time even. She's like, yeah, that's great. Anyways.
Like, yeah, just trying to leave out so much information while getting him on board. But he is pretty much on board, but he's... I assume he's not into ladies, he's into swords, so I don't think it's going to work out.
He's into this sword.
He's into this sword. Virtuous, like, when she stops being a hot sword, he's not going to be into that as much, is what I'm saying. I still can't tell if, like, because I'm just like, he does seem like that kind of guy. Is Linsetsu still playing the role? And is Yuren actually dead? He did seem to super fucking die at the start
of this
episode.
Always have to assume that. But then, like, Zinkai is planning her delicious revenge. She's going to, like, I'm going to send a letter to his wife back at home. Which member of this holy night. It's like, going to tell him exactly how he died and how was Lintet's response. But she's going to fly in here in a rage and looking for revenge. And then to cap it off, I'll reanimate his corpse by a necromancy and force them to fight each other.
Because she made me look bad once, so I'm going to be real dick to her by sending her a letter. Ha ha, killed your husband, come fight him. Wait, I'm not going to leave that. I'll leave that part out. It'll be funny. It'll be a funny surprise for me.
Yeah. And she seems to be doing that in the episode preview, so whether that is his actual corpse or actual body or it's a fake corpse. Because remember, well, Lin's fucking whole deal is crafting illusions and trickery. So we got to always assume he's probably putting this on, his whole madman shtick. And he could be fucking losing up anything out there.
Like, generally, I would take it this show. If a guy super fucking dies, if you see a sword go through him, he goes like, blah, with like loads of blood.
They
and it
turn
has
the
blood
hose
dripping.
On, yeah.
Yeah, they have a lot of blood effects. It's just like, okay, yeah, he's super dead. I would take it in this show. Except you have the most illusion-y motherfucker, the most tricky bastard doing it. I'm just like, I feel like he's faking the whole goddamn thing. I could be fucking wrong. But I would hope that he is still being his dickish self.
Meanwhile, poor Lang Wiao is still trapped in the past, or trapped across time. He's been taken to another fateful day. That's meant.
Okay, but this time it's as the ghost explains, it's more Christmas Carol rules. They can't see or touch you and that kind of shit. So don't worry about it. And it is his mam and the circumstances of his own birth.
It's like, oh, she was the court magician, but she was a commoner. But she fell in love with one of the nobles of the Phoenix Light Palace, and their love was forbidden. It could not be. But I know that our love is pure, no matter what they say. And as long as I'm with you, you're so handsome and noble and good and virtuous. Everything will turn out okay. And he's just going, me, handsome and noble and virtuous, the light of your life. How could you say such a thing about me? His eyes turn red. It's like, didn't you know that all along I was the demon Azzy Belfer, the time travel master? It's like, what? Huh? What? Yes, that's right. Under this hood, the ghost of Christmas past is me, Azzy Belfer. I am your father.
Yeah. Yeah, it does the whole thing. It's a good transformation thing where they kind of slip the hair strands from each other so he can grow out the shock of red that he has. And it's like, oh, so that's why he has the red hair. Not because his mom had red hair, because his demonic father had red hair. I did like the way that his instrument is kind of like, oh, dude, that's totally fucked, dude. He doesn't know what to say when all this has been revealed. It's like, whoa, because he was just there watching all this shit. And he's just a musical instrument. This is a little out of his wheelhouse.
Yeah, I'll get you. It's just fun to punch the ground in frustration and despair. Not sure. Like, I know. I guess the point of that is a cruelty because Azzy Belfer is a demon. He just like eats up cruelty for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Well, I had sex with your mother to have you, and then I cut out her eyes, and then I laughed and left. That was my fucking plan. Also, I didn't raise you, and also. She didn't tell you the circumstances of your birth because it's really fucked up. And she went off to make you birth you in the wilderness while blinded. They really have a thing for blinding the women puppets in this. I hope your one doesn't get blinded next episode that she's coming into.
Yeah, you would think it's 3 for 3, right?
Oh God, yeah. Lots of dramatic happenings and shit, but still I was just like, I just want like all the puppets to start beating the shit out of each other, because all of them are at odds with each other to some extent or another. It's very funny.
Yeah, it's just kind of plans upon plans upon plans, and was kind of fun. Yeah, yeah, the Jenga thing is kind of going to pile up with that, but it feels like it's been kind of doing that for a little bit now. We're ready for you to, you know, yank out that one at the bottom and let it all come down, please.
Yeah.
And for God's sake, tear the plaster off. We know Lin Zetsu has been playing everybody from the beginning. He's got someone tingling in the background all the time. We know he does. Just fucking pull the plaster off. Maybe like Odd Taxi. It's not a magic trick if you know how it works, and it's not as impressive. But thing is, though, I've seen this magic trick before. I've seen this magic show before. I want to get to the final act. I want to get the showstopper finale where he saws the lady in half. And maybe a few people get sawed in half rapidly with a big sword.
Because it has that thing in the opening where clearly one gets resurrected and then Shang-Guan has to fight her, and probably everyone has to fight her, but he has to fight her last or something. I know how these things go. It's fine. Just give me the puppet fights. We've got plenty of puppet violence this episode, but not as much puppet fights as I'd like.
Yeah. But not before Wan Junbo, presumably in the next episode, the Patriot once again, he takes off that mask and relinquishes his affiliation with this evil order and acts upon what he wants.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Righty ho, that is everything for this week. Back Tuesday next week, is that correct, Niall?
Correct, the mundo.
Excellent, we shall see you then with more of this, a bunch of things wrapping up. Well, two things. Everything else is carry on. Yeah, that's right, just two things. Everything else will be going on and on and on. Righty ho, we will see you then. Goodbye.
Bye. Goodbye, everybody. Love you, lads.